Now, back to Cleveland Browns Daily, live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, Indiana, on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, live in Indianapolis at the 2016 NFL Scouting Combine, and a man who's here doing a little scouting for all of you fantasy footballers out there, the great Matthew Berry from ESPN joining us. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm good, my friend. Good to see you.
It is great to see you. It was great running into you yesterday as you come out here and kind of make the rounds and talk to people and get information. So we'll start with that. What's the best piece of info you've gotten so far as you look ahead to next year's fantasy season?
I don't know that there's one piece of information that was, that I would consider the best, but there were a bunch of ones that I thought were sort of interesting, right? And, talking to Jay Gruden, the expectation is that Alfred Morris won't be back with Washington. So can Matt Jones be a number one? And, you know, they like his talent. They want him to get his pad level a little bit lower in terms of his running style, but they like him. But, you know, him saying the two most important things to him for a running back are staying healthy and ball security. And Matt Jones struggled with both those last year. So, you know, my take is Matt Jones is going to be the number one next year, but I think he's on a very short leash. So, you know, I found that to be very interesting as well. Talking to Todd Bowles about his running back situation, does he think, and obviously they've got a lot of free agents to deal with, but does he think Ivory or Powell can be a number one? And he basically said no, that they needed each other, that he didn't think Powell would have the success without Ivory, they didn't think Ivory would have the success without Powell. So just very interesting to sort of get takes on various people. Spoke with Jason Garrett. This was one of the things that was most interesting. I said to Jason Garrett, hey, if the season started today, and how comfortable are you with Darren McFadden as your number one guy? And his answer was, well, we've got the draft, we've got free agency, we're looking at a bunch of different things, but, you know, certainly Darren had his opportunity and did the most with it last year, and we like him a lot. But, I mean, it was the most, like, non-supportive answer ever. Like, the dynasty stock of Darren McFadden took a big hit after my conversation with Jason Garrett. I don't think they're comfortable with him as their number one next year.
Yeah, that's a team that you certainly could go and see getting after a running back in the draft. We're talking with Matthew Berry here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Now, when you look at these rookies last year, there are a lot of them. You talked about Matt Jones, Jeremy Langford with Matt Forte moving on. Thomas Rawls maybe with an opportunity, although we heard he might have some competition there. Which one of those guys do you think is poised to maybe take that next step? Or maybe none.
Of those two guys or just of rookies from last year?
Or you can broaden it out.
I mean, rookies from last year, I mean, I think the obvious guys are David Johnson and Todd Gurley, right? Those
sure.
are two
studs,
exactly. But in terms of guys with opportunity, Langford is obviously pretty interesting to me because we know Matt Forte is going off. I think Thomas Rawls, we'll see, but to me, they like Rawls a lot. And Pretty dominant, and hearing John Schneider talking about him yesterday and they feel really good about where he is in his rehab. And there's a guy that proved, you know, a lot of times you'll say like, oh, well, this guy's going, because we know this other guy is going to, quote, get the work. But in the case of Thomas Rawls, once Marshawn Lynch was injured, I don't think he had less than 20 touches in a game until the Baltimore game where he got hurt. So here's somebody that proved he could carry the load a lot in that offense and was very productive. I mean, his yards per carry average was off the chart. So Rawls, to me, is really, really interesting. Langford I like a lot as well, but they like Kadeem Carey there. The efficiency metrics on Langford aren't
not
terrific.
Good.
Not good.
No.
But, you know as well as any fantasy owner that you don't need to be efficient. You just need
volume.
And it looks like Langford will get a decent amount of that.
Absolutely. And he got the touchdowns. He has a nose for the end zone, and that always props up your value as well. What was more shocking to you when you look at last year's season? Was it more shocking that Gary Barnage became a viable stud fantasy tight end, or that Tim Hightower actually helped people win fantasy championships in weeks 15 and 16?
To me, Tim Hightower is more surprising. We used to, on my podcast, we would call him Gary Barnkowski because he was Gronk-like in his production. I mean, the stats on Barnage
were
crazy. And so, but, you know, you sort of look around the Browns in terms of an offensive and, like, who you throw into
somebody's
and that kind of stuff. Someone's
got
to catch it, right? And so it was a team that had a high volume of passes, obviously, because of the struggles of the defense. So it was more surprising to me that Tim Hightower, who, as of October 31st of last year, hadn't played in the NFL in, like, I think 3 years. And then suddenly, not only is he off of his couch and on an NFL roster, but he's starting. He's getting a high volume of work and being productive with it. And, yeah, he certainly was on a lot of fantasy championship rosters on ESPN. And so that's, to me, the most surprising. And like a true fantasy zombie back from the dead, Tim Hightower. But
it was unbelievable.
That's how great our game is.
It is what's great. To me, it is. Some people say that's why I can't stand season-long fantasy. Tim Hightower wasn't even in the pool of players,
right.
And he's winning titles. And that's why some people like the daily and to play sure. the weekly standpoint. But I think that's fun. There's always going to be that gem. Then, you know, David Johnson, a lot of people knew he had talent but wasn't getting opportunity, and then he carried a lot of people
yes, he did.
Over the second half of the season, and I think he's going to be big time this year.
I think he's going to be a monster. I mean, Arians yesterday was talking about the fact that, you know, he thinks David Johnson has a chance to literally be one of the best, and obviously it's his player, what's he going to say? But you know, the question that was asked him was like, is David Johnson one of the best running backs in the NFL right now? And he's like, I don't want to say that after 1 year, but he has a chance to be one of the best. And it was almost as if he was saying, like, of all time, like truly like
yeah,
a special
like
player.
It.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think certainly getting the volume of work that he did in that offense, I mean, it's really, really impressive. So David Johnson's somebody that's going to go high in drafts next year, no question about it.
Allen Robinson was one of the guys that I loved coming
yes.
out of Penn State, and I had hoped that he would wear the orange and brown. It didn't work out. He went down to Jacksonville. Monster season. Is that a guy you think can repeat that and is kind of moving himself into the fantasy elite?
I do. You know, I don't know that Jacksonville throws as much as they did last year. I mean, and, you know, one of the questions of Gus Bradley in the morning was, you know, 600 pass attempts. You want that number to, you know, and the answer was no. We want that to be lower.
Sure.
You know, they want to improve that defense, and they're hopeful that they're more competitive in games and they're just not throwing, you know, starting in the second quarter, which is what happened in a lot of Jags games. That said, Allen Robinson's a special player.
Agreed.
In terms of, you know, and even the previous year when Bortles had struggled, if you just sort of look at the efficiency numbers, and he was a sleeper for me coming into the season last year. I wasn't alone in that. A lot of people in the fantasy football community liked him a lot, and he paid dividends. So I have Robinson as a top 10 wide receiver. My ranking's already out for next year. Never too early to talk.
Never too
fantasy
early.
Fantasy football. So, yes, I don't believe Robinson was a fluke from last year.
If Josh Gordon is reinstated and comes back to the Browns, what do you think about him? And I know it could be. We might not even know who his quarterback is yet. But
right. To me, that's the bigger thing. Like,
sure.
You know, who's his quarterback, and he comes back, and when does he come back? Does he come back in time for the season? Does he come back in time for all of training camp? You know, because even if they say, like, okay, you're reinstated, but that happens on August 29th, like, you need time to pick up Hughes' playbook
sure.
and get in sync with everyone. So I think if you told me today that Josh Gordon is there at the start of training camp, I think he's probably a top 25 wide receiver for me. With some upside, you
sure.
know, but I don't know that I would want to go into the season counting on him as one of my first two wide receivers, because A, the position is so deep, and B, because again, he's been out of the game for a while. We don't know who the quarterback is. You know, will the Browns get consistent quarterback play? You know, does Josh have his head on straight? You know, is there, if he comes back, like, there's going to be obviously very zero tolerance. So, you know, there'll be eyes on him that and scrutiny on him that aren't on a lot of players in the NFL, and how does he react to that? So
certainly, there's
certainly obviously tremendous talent, a phenomenal player, but risk there as well.
No question. Now, when you look at 2015, it was not a great year for running backs. Do you think that is the beginning of a trend in this pass-happy yeah. NFL, or do you think running backs will bounce back in 2016?
I think they bounce back. I think a lot of it was due to injury.
Uh-huh.
It was just and obviously running backs get injured, but for the most part, the elite guys were elite
when they were on the field.
When they were on the field, Le'Veon Bell and Jamal Charles, and obviously Adrian Peterson had a huge year. Lacy was a disappointment, although he showed some flashes. But, you know, otherwise it was mostly injury-related, right? You know, C.J. Anderson was a disappointment, but in the second half of the year, C.J.
Give him the ball!
Well, right, and in the second half of the year when he was actually finally healthy, he started
good.
Looking like C.J. Anderson again.
Yeah.
So, to me, I think it was just more of an anomaly of just a bunch of injuries. We saw this a couple of years ago where there was that one year where just, like, everyone got decimated, you know, Doug Martin being one of them, and you know, so I think you'll see more return to normalcy, and that the stud running backs will continue to be stud running backs.
Is there anybody that's on your personal I'm done with them, I will not draft list?
I always say that, and then I find myself, you know, I play in so many leagues. I'm just
sure.
Like,
How what's the number at now?
I'm, you know, I every year, right now I'm down to 8.
Okay.
I'm down to 8, but like it, I wind up.
How many do you truly, truly check your scores, care about
all
intensely?
Of them. Okay. All of them. Like, I'll tell you a story. Like, so I'm in a league with my kids and my wife and like our kids' friends and like their parents. It's like a friends and family league, right?
You
want to win that
league,
right?
For sure.
So it's me and so I'm just like, okay, right? And it's half of them don't know what they're doing, and right. Like, it's one of those where we show up to draft day and I hand out cheat sheets from ESPN, and we all, like, literally people go down and kickers go in the fourth round. Like, no one knows what they're doing. I let my kid draft and stay out of it, right? So we're doing all that. You know, that's like not a league I care about. It's just so the kids have something to do and dad does it and whole thing. And about halfway through the season, you know, we lost a game or something like that. And my 11-year-old turns to me and says, you know, how's it going? I was like, oh, you know, we're in fourth. We're okay. He's like, you mean we might not win? I'm like, oh, God. You know, like, now I've got to win for my 11-year-old.
Yeah,
now,
right.
Now I've got to pay attention to this dumb league. You know, now I've got to, like, start grinding into this because I can't let my 11-year-old's like, oh, well, Dad does this for a living. We're going to win,
gonna
right?
Win.
And
yeah.
Like, we ended up winning, thank God. But, you know what I mean? It's like literally, like, even the dumbest, like, league that I think, like, yeah, whatever, you know, there's still my reputation and everyone's all excited about their playing against ESPN's fantasy guy or whatever. And so – sadly, I have to care truly about all of them.
You do, and one of them, obviously, the Stern Show League, which I know for you as a huge Stern fan has
yep.
got to be a ton of fun. I mean, I know we had Michael Rappaport,
right.
you know, making waves in there. What's that league like for you?
It's a blast because, yeah, I mean, I'm a hardcore, diehard Howard Stern fan. I've listened to him for close to 3 decades, and so it's been exciting for me to be able to be on the show and to then become friends, you know, legit, not just playing a league with them, but I become legit friends with a lot of the people on that show. And so anytime you play in fantasy with friends,
it's great.
It's fun. And I've now known those guys for like 6-7 years and, you know, gone out drinking with them and everything like that. And my wife has gotten to know, you know, their wives and everything. So that part is great. The part that is tough is that, so as you mentioned, Michael Rapaport's in it. Very good actor, very charming, very funny guy. Insane.
Intense
and insane. And he's like, he's crazy. And I can't tell you how many people like, and I love Rappaport. I mean, he's genuinely a good dude. And, but he's insane in the league. And it's one of those things where, you know, people ask me all the time, like, you know, I hear him on the radio, like, that's shtick, right? I'm like, no, that's him. Like, if you saw my inbox, like, just like it, and my text from him, and it's like, we get like, You open up your email box and there'll be 6 in a row from him. He'll send you some trash talk and no one responds for 3 minutes, and then he sends more and more and more and more and more. And it becomes sort of exhausting. And, you know, we get on the air and Michael, you know, Michael's an actor and doesn't really answer to anyone and has a larger-than-life personality is one way to put it. And so he can go to a place that I can't. I mean, ultimately, I work for Disney, right? ESPN's owned by Disney.
Correct.
I'm family friendly Maddie over here. So, you know, Michael will say things and put things in public or even in an email that I can't go to the
sometimes
level that he
does.
Sometimes
you're limited to the water pistol in that gunfight.
That's exactly right. So that becomes tough. And then because the league is so public, you want to do well, but they all know my
your rankings.
I walk into it and they're all sitting there with my rankings.
I know the feeling.
And, right. Yes. And I, yeah, you know it. And like, you know, and I own this site called RotoPass, and I, you know, they gave them all subscriptions to RotoPass. So they have all these tools that, that come with, you know, with RotoPass. And so it's, you know, it's a challenge, but it's a blast as well.
When you started as the talented Mr. Roto, if people don't know, did you ever envision fantasy football being what it is today, where it is literally a part of the coverage of the NFL, it's part of the fabric of America, and it's omnipresent. It is everywhere and integrated into everything football.
No, I mean, I thought there would be, here's the thing, I don't think I'm weird. I think, and here's what I mean, like, so I've been playing fantasy sports since I was 14 years old, I'm 46, and so I've been playing it forever, and I'm not a weird guy, and by that I mean, I like Springsteen. I like pizza. I like superhero movies. Like the
stuff I think you're very normal.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Nathan. I've known you for a long time
yes.
as well. So, but the things that I like are like super popular and mainstream. Like
sure.
I don't like weird, you know, obscure. Right, Howard Stern. Right. So the things that I like, and so I think like, so I like all these things, and I also like fantasy football. So if I like all these other things that are very popular and mainstream, I can't imagine that fantasy football is some this weird little obscure offshoot. And the more that people get to know about fantasy football and they try it once, they'll be hooked. And so I thought that as fantasy football grew, and once I got to ESPN, the you know, if I could help popularize it and make it more mainstream, I thought people would get into it and enjoy it. Did I think it would become what it is today, where it's just it's ubiquitous with the NFL? No, I didn't certainly think that I would ever be at like the NFL Combine, and I'd be talking to NFL coaches, and like I would ask them questions that they would take seriously.
Right.
And they would know me. And, like, you know, like I mentioned Jason Garrett. And, like, I went up to him and I'm just, you know, and before I said anything, Jason Garrett stuck out his hand. He's like, I see you on TV. You know, very charming. You know, and I was like,
sure.
I see you on TV. Whatever. Ha, ha, ha. And whatever. And then I asked him a question, you know, about McFadden. But, you know, my point is like, there's a, you know, for the longest time, the NFL and certainly players and coaches within the league held fantasy at sort of an arm's length, and now they either embrace it or at least understand its importance
to
fans,
sure.
to what they do, that they're not dismissive of it, and they'll, you know, they'll give you a genuine answer like Jason gave me about Darren McFadden.
And for all of you who love fantasy football, obviously you should follow him on Twitter. Nearly 800,000 followers at MatthewBerryTMR. You got to get the book Fantasy Life, which bestseller and a hilarious read.
Appreciate
It's one of those books, and this is how I judge. I like to laugh when I read books, and so when it's a book that you're on an airplane and you're just laughing out loud and people are looking like, what is going on? It's one of those books because you've culled so many great stories from other people's real experiences playing fantasy football and the crazy stuff that happens in leagues. And it's fantastic. I play in a league. My favorite league that I play in now is called the Awesome Fantasy Football League with The Miz, the WWE wrestler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
And The Miz's dad ended up becoming famous on WWE TV for not reacting properly when The Miz was getting pummeled right in front of him and he was laughing and kind of looks like a – he's got an interesting look, and so our belt is the George, and it's a plate of the Miz's father. And the loser has to be Virgil, for people who remember the Million Dollar Man and Virgil. So you have to go at the Miz's party every year wearing a sleeveless tuxedo shirt, a sequin vest, a sequin bow tie, and serve everybody around you as though you're Virgil. So it's just – and everybody can relate to that. Everybody has those fun things in their leagues.
Well, and not even that. I mean, you don't need to be – and this is one of the points of the book, and one of the compliments that I got was that I got – people that said that I didn't play fantasy, I still loved your book. Like, I gave my book to my wife, Angie, because you don't need to be a fantasy player to know a guy having to dress up in sequins and, you know, a ridiculous belt with an ugly picture, like what happens in your league, that's funny.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
There's, you know, the guys that, you know, I found and they became sort of, they sort of
the
went
tattoos.
Viral. The tattoo league, right?
It's unbelievable.
And so there's a the loser of the league has to get a tattoo for the rest of his life chosen by the winner.
By the winner.
By the winner. And so there's a 27-year-old kid in Lincoln, Nebraska, walking around with a tattoo of Justin Bieber's face on his leg that says hashtag fantasy loser. Like, you don't have to play fantasy football. And that's funny. And just seeing the picture of that, it's hilarious. And so there's lots of stories like that. And so we send that. By the way, I want to congratulate you. Vegas had the over-under on 8 minutes into our interview of when you would be able to work a wrestling reference in. So nice
they,
job
they
there.
They probably were surprised I went over.
Yeah,
I thought it was a lock to go under.
Yeah, absolutely. I took the under. So what do you know?
So I want to ask you this because you're – and I've gotten to know you for a while and see all the things that you've gotten to do. And what in your career for you personally has either been the coolest experience or maybe the most gratifying? Because in reality – and, you know, look, I worked at CBS. Yep. I worked at CBS. Yep. Fantasy football, at the end of the day, you are – the godfather in many ways of the modern fantasy game because of the platform that you got on, took advantage of, and took to the next level. And so what has been kind of the neatest thing for you or the most gratifying thing for you kind of in this crazy journey you have gone on from the talented Mr. Roto to where you are now?
Well, first off, I appreciate the very kind words, and you know,
it's true.
I don't know how many of your listeners know, but you know, Nathan, very well respected in the fantasy community, and you know, we were sorry to lose you when you got the job with the Browns. Great job for you, obviously, especially for those of you who are friends of you, knowing how passionate you are about the team. But so you did a bunch of great work in the industry for
a long time.
In terms of that, I mean, the most obvious answer is the truth is on is in terms of gratifying, it's my wife and kids. You know, I mean, I went to I met my wife at ESPN. She works at ESPN as well. I'm not at ESPN without fantasy football.
Correct.
So without fantasy football, I don't get to ESPN. If I don't get to ESPN, I don't meet my wife. And without my wife, obviously, I don't have my kids and my family. So, I mean, that's the most amazing thing that fantasy football has brought me. In terms of some of the more...
Let's get a little more superficial.
Right. Along the more name-droppy superficial things, I mean, you're going to mention, like, the idea that I've been on the Howard Stern show four times.
As a guest, as a legit,
you know, like, I was on, like, the last time I think I was on, we were on for, like, an hour and 10 minutes. Like, if you'd ever told me that, like,
yeah,
I would have pictures of me and Howard Stern in my cell phone one day and that I would have been a guest on the show four times, like, never in my wildest dreams.
I remember texting you before the first time you went on, and I could tell, I was, like, fired up for you because I knew how much you loved it. I mean, who doesn't want to be
a
guest on Howard? A guest.
So huge, like stuff like that. Like I'm a stupid parrot head. I love Jimmy Buffett of all things, and so.
Did you celebrate National Margarita Day?
I did celebrate National Margarita Day. So
hopefully.
Through Jimmy's tour manager is a hardcore fantasy football player.
Okay.
The Margarillas, his touring, his roadies. Basically, they have a fantasy football league when they're on tour with Jimmy. And so I've gotten to know them and their fans. And so through that, I've gotten to meet Jimmy a few times. And, you know, so that's been super cool. You know, I'll never forget the, you know, and this one was insane, too. 4 years ago, I got a call from a guy. He says, hey, Matthew, I'm a big fan. Would love for you to come and hang out on our draft in August. And I'm like, listen, I'm flattered, but, you know, I don't really go. I'm kind of busy in August. I don't really do that. I don't really go and hang out at sort of random people's drafts.
He's like, sure.
It's for Jay-Z's league. What time do you need?
Yeah, I'll be there.
You're right. And
thank
so
you.
The last 4 years, I've been a guest of Jay at his league and sort of just go and kind of critique the picks and have some fun. And like,
so let me ask you, because obviously not in Jay's league, but I've done that for various
right, other, yeah,
and people really want that validation. When they draft Ben, you're like,
Yeah.
They must not like that, especially in a league like that, I would imagine. That's got to be pretty fun for you and know that they're in the palm of your hand right there.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious. And, you know, especially with it, – so it's not just Jay, but it's like his closest friends. It's Chris Paul of the Clippers is in that league as well.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's sort of these titans of you know, the guy that runs
industry,
Rock Nation,
sure.
And, you know, the president of Atlantic Records, everything like that. So it's very funny, like, you get up there and, like, I start, you know, doing my nerd stats about why it was a good pick or a bad pick. And Jay is literally the greatest trash talker in the history of fantasy football. You can just imagine how
sure.
good he is. And
sure.
I won't do it justice. A, most of it I can't put on the radio.
Right.
And B, it's just going to sound like a bad impression of Jay-Z. But he's phenomenal. And so he just... It's great because I'll like trash a pick and then Jay will take that and just, you know, just
take it
roll
to the next
with
level.
It. Yeah, take it exactly.
That's gonna be so
like
much fun.
So it's a blast, and they you know, every year they're very gracious to have me in there. And so the idea that I would spend 3 hours with Jay, I mean, it's just stupid, right?
You know, it's great. It's
so
the power. It just
right.
shows you the power of it.
Power
and now
fantasy
it,
football.
Everybody's the same in the world of fantasy football. So I'll leave you with this. What's the one thing you would tell people who are either in the game or trying to get into the game? What's the number one piece of advice through all of your years in fantasy football to an aspiring fantasy football champion?
It would be that to be yourself and to find, you know, there's no conspiracy to keep good people out, right?
Right.
You know, no, seriously. Like, and so too many times you see people that are just like, oh, well, that's a ripoff of this guy. I mean, I think one of the reasons why you made an impact and you had a very quick rise in the industry is like you found a unique, you know, using your accounting background and everything like that in terms of the stats that you found and the analytics you used, Nathan, you found a unique way to present the information that wasn't being done at that time. And so I think the people that have done well in the industry, the people that say, because ultimately there's only so many ways you can say, like, I like Duke Johnson,
sure.
you know, I don't like Isaiah Crowell or whatever. And ultimately it's finding different ways to present that information in an interesting way, an informative way. Teach me something I don't know.
Right.
You know, tell me something, help me go a next level. So that would be the biggest thing is that don't worry about trying to get on TV or trying to get on the radio. Just get good. Like, just, you know,
find your way.
Find your way. Keep writing and develop your voice and your persona, your point of view. And I think that will, you know, when you have an original, interesting point of view, that is what will help you get to the next level.
Well, we could have done this all day. We got to take a break. Thank you so much for the time, Matthew Berry from ESPN.
Pleasure as always, my friend.
It was glorious. All right, we'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more about the Browns, a little combine. We got Greg Cosell. Well, Greg Cosell spent some time with him.
Oh, he is the terrific. Best.
Phenomenal. He's not able to be with us live because he's with Browns coach Al Saunders. They do a lunch at P.F. Chang's every year at the Combine, and so he's got a three-hour lunch with Al Saunders today. But we talked to him earlier, and we'll have him up next.
Perfect.
Yes, sir. Matthew Berry, thank you so much. We'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily.
Now, back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, Indiana, on ESPN 850 WKNR.
That's right. Back at the Combine, had an opportunity to talk to Greg Cosell of NFL Films, a guy who watches more tape than just about anybody on the planet and loves to study those quarterbacks. And here's what he had to say about the Browns and the quarterbacks available to them at number two. Nathan Zagura live in Indianapolis with one of the real treasures of the Combine and certainly the NFL world from NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Greg, great to be with you. Thanks for taking your time.
Oh, Nathan, always good to be with you.
All right, let's talk quarterbacks, something you know very well.
Quarterbacks again.
Yes, it seems like we do this a little too often for the Browns.
For the Browns, yes. I guess you guys were hoping maybe a couple years ago we wouldn't be having this conversation again.
Yes, but here we are. And so Carson Wentz, right. Jared Goff. Let's start with Jared Goff out of Cal.
Yeah.
What have you seen from him on tape that would allow him to be a successful or not be a successful quarterback in the NFL?
I like Goff. The concern a lot of people have is just his weight. And again, I don't know what he can gain or what he can't gain. And that's a legitimate concern. But on film, I think you see a kid that's pretty refined for a college quarterback. And I really didn't know much about him when I put in the tape. I don't know a lot about the air raid offense. You don't see that in the NFL. And I was pleasantly surprised at the number of intermediate and downfield throws that I saw on film. He was not just, dinking and dunking the ball. He was progression reading. And I'll tell you one thing that I saw, Nathan, that you don't see with a lot of NFL quarterbacks, which he did very well. He moved his feet with his eyes. And if you can picture that, that's really, really critical because there's a lot of quarterbacks who might look left and then they want to come back to the right, but they don't move their feet and they end up throwing the ball off balance,
right.
And that impacts accuracy and velocity. Goff had a really nice pocket feel for moving his feet, getting his body and his lead foot pointed in the direction he was throwing the ball. And while he doesn't have a gun, like I'd probably say his arm is like a Matt Ryan, which is good enough, more than good enough to be a quality NFL quarterback. There's a lot more pros for me with Goff than cons.
I see him kind of as a hybrid of Matt Ryan and my man Theodore Bridgewater. I kind of see a little bit of a hybrid there.
He's a better thrower than Bridgewater.
Cerebral from the
And I think Goff is just judging from the film, I don't know Jared Goff personally, but judging from the film, he seems like a smart player, aware player. He's been a three-year starter. He understands his offense really well. And that's the way I always look at it. People always say that, well, he's in an offense that doesn't translate. Well, almost no college offense truly translates to the NFL.
Right.
So what I try to look at is how well does he understand and execute the concepts that he's been coached to execute. And Goff knows his offense really well.
Would you be comfortable with the Browns selecting him number two overall?
I would. Although I know we're going to lead into Carson Wentz, I think Wentz is the more physically gifted player. He's 6'5 plus, he's 233, really good arm, throws with tremendous core torque, lower body torque, moves well. I'm not going to sit here and say he's Andrew Luck because that'd be silly. But, I mean, just the traits, you see some of those elements in just the traits.
Uh-huh.
Now, reasonable people will disagree about the smaller college element to his game, what that means. I'm one who's not as big a believer in that. I look more at the traits, attributes, characteristics, and I think he has those to be a quality and potentially a high-level starter in the league.
Have you seen a guy go from, because I remember people would talk about him in the middle of the year before he got hurt, maybe a top 100 guy, round two, round three, and then since then he's played in his bowl game.
Yeah.
He's gone down the Senior Bowl, and now people are talking about him for the Browns at number two overall.
Well, and I think that's more a function of the small school stuff, because I think the small school means that he's not highly on people's radar early. And I'm talking scouts.
Right.
I'm not talking media. I'm talking scouts. Because, believe me, there's a large group of scouts who are very good and they're very reasonable who just look at a smaller school guy and think, okay, he's not a top 10 or a top 20 pick because he's playing in a smaller school.
Right.
And now I think when you actually start studying the guy and look at the individual and remove him from the school, you see NFL traits. And we saw that at the Senior Bowl. I was not there because we do my final matchup show that week, the preparation. But from what I've heard from a lot of people, he more than held his own at the Senior Bowl and in the game as well.
So physically, bigger ceiling, bigger upside than Goff?
Theoretically, yes. I mean, he's just a bigger, better athlete with a stronger arm.
Do you see with Goff maybe a higher floor given his polish and what he's done so far?
You know, Goff strikes me as a guy who will be a good NFL quarterback. Now we get into how good,
right,
and then you get into other things. What kind of team is he on? How is he deployed? You know, what is he asked to do? You know, is he on a team with a really good defense where, you know, he doesn't have to throw it 40 times? You know, you get into so many variables when you get into the other things beyond just the quarterback's traits. And, you know, we've seen guys come in the league, like with Wentz, for instance. Joe Flacco came in from the same level,
yep,
of college football with the Ravens on a team that had Ray Rice in his prime, that had still a dominant, dominant defense. And Joe Flacco that year threw relative, by NFL standards, very few passes,
yeah,
and was able to do that and win.
Yep.
And, you know, and was able to grow as a quarterback because he was on a complete team. You know, if Carson Wentz or Goff comes to Cleveland, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed probably to say they're a real complete team right now.
Right.
And, you know, if either one of those guys is asked on a weekly basis to have to throw it 42 times a game, the results at times will be ugly. But that doesn't mean those guys can't be good quarterbacks over time.
Right. Through all your tape study, and I know you take copious notes on all of these players,
yeah,
do you ever go back and look and say, you know, after these years looking at, these are the traits that actually seem to lead to the most success,
oh, yeah,
in the NFL? And what are those?
Well, that's a really long conversation, Nathan. I mean, let's reduce.
I got to get on this P.F. Chang's,
yeah,
circuit.
You're right. Let's reduce it to the simplest terms.
Okay.
What you're really looking for, and there's 10 elements to each of the things I'm going to say about it. What you're looking for is a guy who can throw it to the right receiver at the right time with the right kind of throw. So you're really looking for when does a guy throw it, where does he throw it, and how does he throw it. And like I said, we could discuss each one of those in great detail because that's a lengthy process, but that's what you're really looking for. And, you know, if guys can't do, if you don't see that in college, then it's probably not going to happen in the NFL.
Okay. Yeah. If you were Sashi Brown right now, is there a clear-cut pick for the Cleveland Browns in that situation between Goff and Wentz in your mind?
Well, I like Wentz a little more just because I'm a traits guy. I mean, that's just the way I do it, which doesn't make me right or wrong. It's just my approach.
Uh-huh.
I like Wentz. I think Wentz, you know, to use the cliched terms, has the higher ceiling. But I think he can become one of those guys, whereas Goff, to me, will be a quality NFL starter, more along the lines of the Matt Ryans.
All right, Greg, always a pleasure going to the Learning Tree with you. Thank you very much for your time, and enjoy your P.F. Chang's today.
I will absolutely do that. Thanks, Nathan.
All right, thank you. The great Greg Cosell there. He likes the intangibles, the size of Carson Wentz, thinks it gives him an upside advantage over Jared Goff. Jared Goff more polished right now, but doesn't have the athletic upside. And that's true. You can't be bigger. It's just not going to happen unless he goes on one of the latest growth spurts known to man, Jason Gibbs. And I'm not going to bet on that going forward there. But still, two big, very pro-ready quarterbacks. And, you know, I like the comparison. If you were to tell me right now that we could get a guy who's Matt Ryan plus, I would feel pretty good about that for the Cleveland Browns, and you would at least feel
that
like
would
you had an opportunity to compete and do some things here. So we'll see what happens there. When we come back, Sir Andrew Gribble will join us and let us know his key takeaways from today in Indy as we are live at the Combine on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Now, back to Cleveland Browns Daily, live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, Indiana, on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to the Combine in Indianapolis. A lot covered on the show today. If you're just joining us, I'd urge you to check out the podcast. You get that at clevelandbrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. Had a good interview with Matthew Berry. We've talked with Greg Cosell. We've talked with Rich Gannon as well here. We heard from Jared Goff, his presser. Tomorrow we'll have Carson Wentz for you on CBD. But now let's bring in the senior staff writer at clevelandbrowns.com and the Browns mobile app, Sir Andrew Gribble. Gribbs, busy day here in Indy. Sashi spoke this morning. Goff spoke. Wentz is speaking. What were your key takeaways today?
It just seems like there's so many more interesting players going through the media room. Maybe that's because we're, you know, simple people that like quarterbacks and wide receivers as opposed to,
I do,
you know, offensive linemen that you really haven't heard of going through the media room. But clearly, Goff, Wentz, those are the two biggest guys that have gone in there. Wentz just spoke. But, you know, my takeaway was Goff just, I would say he exuded confidence. I think that was the clear thing without being too cocky. I think the back and forth about his fumbles was very good, and the back and forth about his hand size was very good. But the intriguing thing to me about him that was brought up that I hadn't thought about before was, you know, he's been through a major rebuilding process at Cal. They were terrible his freshman year, and he admitted that. But the last year they went 8-5. I mean, there was a really big rebuilding process for Sonny Dykes at Cal, and Goff was a big reason why they got back to a respectable level. You know, Cal's not going to be a team that's playing for national championships, but they got to be a solid team in the Pac-12, and he was a big reason why. And, you know, he knows what it's like to be down, be rebuilding, and I think that's an intriguing aspect when it comes to maybe his candidacy for the number 2 pick with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and he was a guy I thought it was interesting noted. He's always working. He's got a chip on his shoulder, and you could tell he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder in the repartee with some of the guys on the Browns beat.
Yeah, it's interesting because I wonder if part of him's thinking, like, how the heck am I being compared to a guy that went to North Dakota State? I wonder if the part of him's like that. And I think the fact that he's such a polished quarterback and there's doubt now if he's going to be the first quarterback in the draft. I wouldn't want him to assume he was going to be the first quarterback in the draft, but I think he believes he is the best quarterback in the draft. And I think that was clear just in a small media session. But more importantly, it's going to be how he portrays himself in these interviews behind the scenes and any other time he's meeting with potential future employers.
And what were your thoughts on Wentz?
Solid. He's a guy that we talked to at the Senior Bowl, so I kind of knew what to expect. But, you know, I think clearly what stands out about him is the size. Really kind of he has that AFC North size, if you will, you know, the Flacco, Roethlisberger type build and everything like that. And he has the experience in a pro-style offense. I don't think confidence is an issue with him either. He doesn't present himself or talk like a guy who came from the middle of nowhere and isn't used to this kind of thing. I think the Senior Bowl was a good preparation for him because he was the guy at that event. I mean, he was far and away, and I think that prepared him for what he just did here at the Combine with the media availability. I think he handled it well. He brushed off the notion that he has huge hands, and that's great for him. I think he just believes he's a good quarterback. He thinks he can be a franchise quarterback, which I'm wondering if that's something that was even on his radar 2 years ago, and it kind of the sudden fame is coming to him fast, but he seems to be handling it pretty well.
Sashi Brown spoke earlier today, the executive vice president of football operations for the Browns, and it seemed like Josh Gordon was the main takeaway there. Brown saying that Gordon would have a spot on this team when he is reinstated and after he meets with and satisfies Sashi and Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, just a lot of kind of positive comments about Josh Gordon. It seems like it's been trending in that direction for a while, but the Browns are in a position where they can only say so much because this is a league matter at this point. You don't have him on your roster until the NFL says you can have him on your roster. And whether or not that happens before free agency starts, we don't know. I mean, I think that Sashi seemed to indicate that they won't know by the time free agency begins. And, you know, so you with Josh Gordon, even if you believe it's trending in the right direction, which I think they clearly do, he's not someone you're going to bank on, lock him in at that number one receiver spot because he's got to go through a few months of training camp, practice. He hasn't played a full season since 2013. So there's a lot of variables there, and I think he's got to meet with Hugh Jackson, get really comfortable with him. They got to figure out how would you use him in an offense. So I think it's early with Josh Gordon, but I think it's good that where the Browns are at with him now, it's just going to be an ongoing storyline that really goes all the way through September if he is clear.
And you detailed that at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. For the rest of the day, what can people look for in terms of your coverage on ClevelandBrowns.com and the app?
Patrick and I are covering the quarterback position extensively today. I've got a story coming up just kind of laying out what Hugh Jackson, not only what he wants from a quarterback when they're on the team, but what he's looking for a quarterback in a combine setting. I think the comments he made on the show yesterday were intriguing, that he really does value these on-field workouts. He wants to see how they handle the spotlight. He loves the fact that all these quarterbacks are actually participating in these on-field drills. So that's important. And clearly those 15-minute meetings with these quarterbacks, he's asking them pointed questions. They have, I think, specific questions for each player. They're prepared and maximizing those 15 minutes that they get with those quarterbacks. So it's a quarterback-heavy day, even though there's another position we're almost ignoring today. because the quarterback is so dominant, but Browns need some wide receivers too, and there's a lot of those guys talking today, and we'll have that cover as well.
Absolutely. Sir Andrew with us here. He'll be with you all week long here at the Combine in Indy on ClevelandBrowns.com and, of course, the Browns mobile app. Just a quick one because I know we're running out of time, but do you think when the Browns leave this Combine, they're going to have a good idea of which quarterback they want?
I do. I think it's a lot stronger, but we've heard a lot of valuing of pro days here, which is a little different from the past regime. They've talked about how they're going to attend these things.
Good.
You can really meet with the quarterbacks and those things. I think that the key for Hugh is he said he wants to spend some time with these quarterbacks, wants to get to know them, feel comfortable, and have them feel comfortable with what the Browns are doing as well.
All right. That'll do it for us from today. Tomorrow, we've got a lot of stuff lined up for you. We'll hear from Carson Wentz, Louis Riddick. We're going to hear from hopefully a lot of people out here in Indianapolis. Maybe Sashi Brown. We'll see. But we'll keep you covered on all the latest happenings in Indianapolis. We want to thank Greg Cosell for his time today. We've got to thank the great Matthew Berry. You can follow him on Twitter at MatthewBerryTMR. He did a phenomenal job. Great interview with us today. Lots of stuff worth checking out on the app if you missed the live broadcast, including someone acting a fool. But we'll
a fool.
No names, please. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. Thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, live from the Combine on ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.